right behind you.
Get right. the mic closer to your head.
It didn't start yet.
You know what we're about to. I'm just making okay. sure the levels are good.
Okay.
As we're talking and shooting the shit. All right.
Are you going to talk to me like that when we're in the podcast?
I can't.
I don't
promise.
Know how I'm going to respond.
However you want to. This is great. This is our dynamic. Hello. I'm Avital Ash.
I'm Jessica Richard.
And this is...
He's Right Behind You.
Ah! Today, our guest, sitting to my right, feel free to introduce yourself.
Andrew Gerland.
That's right.
Yeah.
Correct. Welcome.
Okay, I got the first one right.
You did a great job. That was so good. Andrew and I went to the same Jewish high school in Miami.
Yes.
We didn't know each other at the time.
Well, not just high school. It wasn't just a high school.
Oh, it was a middle school and stuff too.
But and an elementary school.
Right. I didn't go for elementary. I went for middle. No, I did. You're right. Never mind. I take it all back. You're right.
I went K through 12, except for 3 weeks in 10th grade.
Wow.
Yeah. For a little while, I wanted to be in high school in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I tried public school, but it just, it wasn't like the movies.
Oh, which, yeah. No, funny. I can attest to that. I did that for 4 years.
You made a movie about high school, but it was not the public school. It was the Hebrew Academy experience.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did like a cheating in private school. There's a lot of cheating in private school.
Yeah, I think it's everywhere, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. We didn't have a lot of cheating in our public school.
But this was analog.
We were motivated.
This was analog cheating.
Yeah,
this
like
was
looking over someone's
pre-technology.
Shoulder.
Yes, crib sheets, writing
yeah,
very
that's
small.
That's what I think of.
That was a big part of it. Breaking into teachers' offices, bribing teachers' kids.
Ooh.
Bribing teachers' kids
yes.
what, to get like the tests
yes.
or something?
Yes.
That's smart.
Yeah.
You think if you're so smart at cheating, you might just be smart enough to do well.
You sound like a teacher who's like, if only you'd apply yourself.
You know, my mom is a college professor, so maybe that's where this comes from.
Yeah. Well, we met because I did like a little internet sketch, and then you were like, I like this. And then we met up, and then now we've been friends, and it feels like we should have known each other from Miami, but we don't. Although, my best friend who I've mentioned on here before, who lives in Israel.
You're talking so fast.
I know. Sorry. It's all the cocaine. Her brother-in-law is your friend
is that
from
part
Miami.
Of it, the cocaine?
Yeah.
Is there cocaine?
Mm-hmm. Do you want some?
Yeah, sure. You know what? I had cocaine for lunch.
Okay. You're set for right now.
Yeah,
but yeah we did have all this like weird Miami overlap, but we didn't know each other.
Yes. And now we've been friends for many years.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Andrew is a writer, a director, a producer, sometimes an actor.
Sometimes.
A lot of hats.
Yeah. And I loved Married, which was a show Andrew created.
I watched that show.
You did?
Yes, I really did.
Okay, good. That's
did
cool.
you like it?
Yeah, I did.
I guess you can't really say no right
well,
now.
Well, no, I honestly did because I really liked Nat Faxon from The Way, Way Back. So then when I saw he was in a show, I was like, I will watch that.
Yeah.
And I did.
And I've seen Broken Condom and I kept wanting to say Brubiglia, but Grimalia is what I mean. And I had never seen The Last Exorcism, but I did watch it this last week, which you wrote with Huck.
That was a horror movie.
Yeah,
yes.
So that feels relevant to this podcast.
Yeah.
It's up our alley.
I read on the internet that you guys were going to direct it, but because of cheaters, because of a scheduling thing?
Yes, we were going to direct it. My partner at the time and I had two movies that got greenlit at the same time. And so we were...
High-class problems.
Seriously,
and they both got shot in New Orleans.
Wow.
That's amazing.
For one summer, we were the kings of New Orleans.
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
You got to make a movie about that.
Yeah, it was really cool. But anyway, so we were prepping Last Exorcism, and then Virginity Hit got greenlit. And they were so pregnant with Last Exorcism that... they were going to make it no matter what because they'd already started spending money. But if we didn't jump to Virginity Hit, they would not make that. So mm-hmm. the only way to get both movies made was for us to like leave the movie that we really wanted to. I mean, we wanted to make them both. We didn't want to have to choose.
But you were more partial to Last Exorcism?
I was not more partial to Last Exorcism. Huck definitely was.
Yeah.
But Virginity Hit was a studio movie. It had Sony behind it, and it had guaranteed distribution. Of course, they ended up dumping it, and Last Exorcism became open number one and became a successful franchise. So,
so cool.
We made the wrong move, and it cost me a lot of money. But,
but it is a nice...
both movies got made, which really is, at the end of the day, you're trying to get as much stuff as you as you can get made. So.
It's a huge victory regardless, but then I also love that it's like the indie movie without the studio that is the one that blows up. It's
of
just
course,
like a very hopeful... story.
Yeah, who would know?
Yeah.
Well, like I'm working on this one thing right now that I'm so sure is dead, which makes me think it's going to get made.
Right.
Ooh.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Like, it feels so dead that I'm like, I don't know. Like,
it's going to surprise
me. I think the world
me.
Is fucking with me.
Yeah.
So,
I hope that's the case.
Yeah. But I never saw myself writing a horror movie or getting into horror. It was really kind of a fluke thing. My partner Huck and I had been working in this like fake documentary genre. We made that movie Mail Order Wife.
Oh yeah, which I also saw, which was great.
Was like scripted as this like weird indie comedy, and it was not at Sundance.
Okay, I made that up. What was at Sundance?
Frat House, a documentary I made about fraternity hazing, which is a horror movie in its own way.
Wow.
Do you know about that movie?
No, I haven't seen Frat House.
Are we even friends?
I just rattled off a bunch of other stuff I've seen.
It was a documentary that I made with Todd Phillips, where we were for HBO about fraternity hazing and all the terrible things that these frat guys do in the hazing process.
Wow.
And we lost access in the middle of the movie.
Oh, God.
And in order to get the guy, like, we got kicked off the campus where we were shooting it because all the kids were afraid of getting in trouble. No one wanted to, like, reveal what their practices were. So what they did was, what we did was, we went to a new school. And we didn't tell them we were making a documentary. We said we were making an independent film about fraternity hazing and the crazy. I mean, an independent film about these two nerdy filmmakers who never got into a fraternity when they were in college and now want to see what it's like. And we just want you guys to haze us and show us what you do. So that's how we got people to show the hazing.
But then you needed releases and stuff.
Well, we got releases, and it did say documentary in the release, but nobody read that. Because also, we were like, you know, encouraging them to be unsober.
Right.
Because they were best.
Like any good reality show.
Exactly.
Wow,
so,
that sounds horrifying.
But then after it made this splash at Sundance, it turned out that one of the executives actually was like a what do you call it? Not a graduate,
alumni.
Alumni. Yes.
I went to college. I was in a sorority.
Alumnus.
Alumni of that.
Alumni is plural, right?
No, you say you're alumni of a school.
I thought I was an alum or alumnus. I don't know.
I think you would say an alumnus. Single would be an alumnus.
Yeah.
But who? Listen, are we fighting about, guys? was an alumnus. One of the executives, like a big top executives at the company, was an alumnus. And then they had this whole big investigation about how we made the movie. And then HBO ultimately decided not to air it, which was a bummer.
Yeah.
But
still,
it helped launch my career, that movie. So
it's amazing that you found a solution after you lost access.
Yeah.
Well, and then didn't Todd Phillips make the Will Ferrell fraternity one?
He did.
Yeah.
What is that called? Why did I just...
Old School.
Yes. Yeah.
In Mail Order Wife, which did not premiere at Sundance, I was wrong. But something that I think is so remarkable about that movie is all the performances feel like a documentary. And it's not just the way it's shot. It just feels so real.
So
that's kind of a horror in some ways.
Well, there are parts of it that are really harrowing.
The snake and the... Oh,
and
that
when
was
she's
hard for
in
me
the basement.
Watch.
And Huck and I started talking. And we, you know, it kind of read as a comedy, but we shot it so authentically that people were really freaked out by some of the darker material. And we just started, like, joking around with each other because there's this one scene where the guy who gets the mail order bride, like, does some bad stuff to his mail order bride in the basement. And we're like, what if the movie never got out of the basement?
Oh, my God.
Like, what if we just kind of, like made a movie in that tone? And then we got a call about some guy who wanted us to do a horror movie. And just he only had the... Well, at first he offered me, this guy Eric Newman offered, they had another movie, some comedy that they wanted me to direct, and I did not respond to it. But then they love Mail Order so much that they were like, would you guys want to do a horror movie? And they just had the words demonic possession.
Ugh.
And I thought about demonic possession, and there's this amazing documentary called Marjo about a tent preacher who is showing, giving access to a documentary crew about like what it's really like to be a tent preacher and how he riles the audience up.
A tin preacher?
Tent. Like a Pentecostal tent preacher.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about.
She's not a religious at all.
No, but I've seen movies.
Okay. I feel like you just went, she's not a Jew, so she knows all
No,
the
but
other.
She's from Texas. She knows from Plano, Texas. They got to have people.
I'm from the Bible Belt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but he full on admits to being a con man and just, you know, taking advantage of these people and feels bad about it. So he's letting a documentary crew behind the scenes.
Wow.
So
as like penance.
Exactly. So I was like, well, what if a guy lets a crew make a movie about how he does that and how he does exorcisms, but it's all bullshit. But then something happens that he cannot explain. So yeah. Marjo with a left turn was our angle.
And, oh, such a good
and it was, and it was really inspired by, like, you know, frat house and mail order are inspired by a lot of documentary classics.
Yeah.
And so too was Last Exorcism.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's great.
So I'm a real student of, like, documentary classics.
Yeah.
I love them. And I'm always trying to, like, figure out stuff that I've seen and how to, like, reinterpret it.
Yeah, we've played with some docu-series ideas, you and I. Yeah. It's also really great for anybody who's trying to do something low budget. It's really smart. And it's scary and it's good. And we'll have to talk about The Last Exorcism another time. We'll have somebody else on to talk about it so you don't have to talk about your own movie. Okay, wait. So what is your relationship with horror?
Did you grow up with it?
Yeah.
Well, like, the things that I knew about horror were usually, like, the comedy version of it. Like, my knowledge of, like, Dracula and, like, Frankenstein or The Mummy was when Abbott and Costello met them, you know? Or, like, when Scooby-Doo had to deal with them.
Yeah.
Like, that's my first introductions to horror were all through comedy.
That makes so much sense.
And everything was always funny to me. Like, whenever I saw, like, a monster, I always thought it was silly and never took it very seriously.
Yeah.
So I didn't really get scared by a lot of horror movie imagery as a kid. And I also, like, I read Mad Magazine. I watched Saturday Night Live. So I would see, like, the spoof of The Exorcist before I saw The Exorcist.
Right.
So I would know the scary scene in the joking way before I knew. And every horror movie that would was really popular would be parodied in Mad Magazine. So I would see all those things, and they wouldn't be so scary to me by the time I saw them. So I don't know. It was hard for me. I didn't get scared a lot by horror movies when I was a kid. I was much more scared by, like, my parents took me to a lot of, like, 70s movies, and those kinds of things scared me.
What kinds, like, of movies?
I mean, Injustice for All, when Al Pacino was a lawyer, and one of his clients was in jail and talking about getting raped, and I asked my mother, I knew what rape was, but I didn't understand how, like, a man could rape another man. And then I asked my mom, you know, I, like, whispering in the theater, like, I know what rape is. How can a man rape another man? And my mother, who's, you know, she's not like other moms, really.
Saw a thing about her.
And so she, like, her face lit up, and she was like, well, the bigger guy takes the smaller guy and shoves his penis in the smaller guy's butthole. And that was, like, that's my biggest movie, like, fright I ever had.
Oh, makes so much sense. You're just getting clearer and clearer to me. Were you scared at all while you were writing The Last Exorcism?
No, I mean, I was not. I was scared that it wouldn't be good, but I wasn't scared of.
I find when I'm writing like thrilling or tense scenes, I get tense, and I wondered, no.
Yeah, sometimes when I'm writing erotica, I will have an analogous experience.
Yes. He's just talking about anything with a pregnant woman. That's erotica to Andrew, because Andrew is the proud father of three girls.
I have three daughters. That's right,
and he
likes
them pregnant
to their mother.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
That works out nicely.
Yeah.
Is there, I mean, I guess you sort of answered this, but is there anything else, like an image, a real life experience, a scene, a painting, anything that has stuck with you as, like, the scariest thing you've ever seen?
Well, I mean, growing up, I had this reoccurring dream of being lost in Publix, like the supermarket from where we grew up. I just was so afraid. And I used to get lost a lot because I'm like, I don't pay attention. And my mother would be busy and I would get lost. And so I would wake up terrified, like I was in the frozen food section, like freezing. And that was a big fear.
In your dream,
of mine.
Could you not leave the frozen food area? Like, at least be lost somewhere warm.
I felt like I was cold in the dream, stuck in the frozen foods.
Yeah.
And I was going to live there forever. Yeah.
I was always the kid, though, and as soon as I got lost, I wouldn't even look for my mom. I would just go up to the front desk and have them announce, like,
smart
lost child, like, smart. Patricia Richards, there's a lost child. And my mom was always like, that should not be your first thing. Everyone thinks I'm a terrible parent because you keep getting lost.
My first thing is panic, like, to panic.
Have you ever lost?
You don't want to forget to panic. Yes, I have lost kids.
Oh.
No fun.
Yeah, it sounds
And then
awful.
One time I lost a kid in a supermarket in New York City, and then, like, she ran out into the street. I mean, on the sidewalk, not on the street. And some guy had her, and like I was so scared, I just grabbed her, and he was like, "You could say thank you." Like, and he was so judgmental and pissed off. And yes, I have lost kids. That's terrifying.
Mixed
losing
feelings.
A kid.
You're like, "Fuck that guy," yeah. But also thanks for saving my kid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have nightmares ever now about losing them, or is it still you lost at Publix?
No, I don't have such bad dreams about the kids.
Anything about
terrible.
Milo ever? Milo's the dog.
No.
Okay.
But I stepped on him today and I felt really bad.
Yeah. I'm like, "I'm so sorry," but they don't know what that means.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
I think they understand tone.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
I think they sense.
They sense that it's not deliberate.
Yeah. They're not like, "Stupid dog."
Yeah. Aw, it already like made me feel sad just hearing you say it. Is there another basic question?
I think those are all the questions.
All right, cool. Well, you chose.
Can I go?
You bye. Thank you so much.
Yeah, let's talk about this movie because I was scared to watch it.
I was
because
too.
I went to film school and they covered it, but we didn't actually watch it. So all I had memories of was they showed the final scene when I was in film school, and they talked about how it had been like banned and outlawed, and it was so provocative and stuff. So then when I sat down to watch it, I was like, "Great, this is gonna be awful."
I was scared too, and you told me that it wasn't that scary.
I really liked it.
Yeah. Hey. Well, do you want to tell us why you chose Freaks? And this is Todd Browning's Freaks from 1932. Is that right? 1932?
There are a lot of reasons why I chose it. So, for one, I always had a fascination with little people. And that's not necessarily something that I'm proud of, but it's just true. And so, like, when I was in second grade at Hebrew Academy, they had a circus, like a circus curriculum where you learned a lot about the circus. And I was obsessed with, like, Tom Thumb and Mishu.
Wait,
and I, like,
there was a circus curriculum? What?
In Mrs. Learfield's second grade class, she would teach about the circus in every second grade. Okay?
Wow. All right.
And I did not care about Gunther Gable Williams and the animals. Did not care. I actually thought that was weird. Like, what are you doing? Why are animals doing tricks and stuff? But the little people, I was like, yes.
Yeah.
I understand that. That's interesting to me. Mm-hmm. And so I had a fascination, and I was obsessed with Hervé Villechaize from Fantasy Island. In fact, my bar mitzvah theme was Fantasy Island.
Yes.
And I wore a white suit, like Mr. Rourke, and my brother was tattooed. My little brother Rory was tattooed. So I loved also Hervé Villechaize in Man with the Golden Gun, too. Like, I was just a big fan of his. And then when I got into documentary, I really wanted to make a documentary about dwarf tossing, which was a big thing in Florida.
What?
So in Florida, in these bars, they were like putting little people in harnesses and they were throwing them. And they were creating these controversies where they would call the promoters of the dwarf tossing would call up the police and say, "Something terrible's happening. You're not going to believe it. They're throwing little people, you know, and you got to stop them." And then they would call, they would write an article about it. It would become a controversy. Everyone would go see it, you know.
Wow. So, would the police shut it down?
No, but it would just become a thing. You know what I mean? Become a controversy. And then you call the press and the press say the police were there.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, and then there were like
I've
little
never
people.
Never heard of this.
There were little people activists that were trying to stop it and having marches. And of course, they were only making more money from it. So I was fascinated with that. And then when I got to school, NYU Film School, I always liked cult movies. I always liked movies that, you know, have you ever heard of this? Have you ever, stuff that everybody didn't know about. Especially like when before the internet and you had to have a VHS. So when I started talking about like to the other film students I met about the stuff that I wanted to do and was interested in the dwarf tossing documentary, they're like, "Well, have you ever seen Todd Browning's Freaks?" And just love the whole idea of this movie. And then my brother-in-law wrote a script about the making of this movie.
Oh, wow.
And so I was talking to him about it a lot. So I know a lot of weird facts about the movie, how it got made.
Wow.
And that to me is so exciting. Like the way this movie got made is so interesting because, first of all, it's like such a weird movie and it's the very beginning of talkies. Like it's basically in the scope of movies with sound, it's like in the first group.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's so weird.
And it was like a career killer for Todd Browning.
Yeah, and it's so weird when you think about it like that. So Universal was having all this success at the time with, I think first maybe it was The Hunchback of Notre Dame, then, there was another Bela Lugosi one. Another Lon Chaney one. Mm-hmm. But then Todd Browning made Dracula there, which was a huge hit. MGM with, you know, Irvin Thalberg wanted to compete with Universal and their horror franchises and said, let's have Todd Browning make a movie. So why does Todd Browning want to make Freaks? Well, he's making some other movie with Lon Chaney, who's the guy who was the werewolf and the he was the Hunchback of Notre Dame. He was like a big horror star.
And he was going to be in this, I read.
He was going to be in this. And a movie with him and Harry Earls, who... Harry Earls is the little person who stars in this movie. Right.
And he's a producer on it, and he was like a big proponent of it.
Exactly. Yeah. He had this short... He was trying to develop for himself, which you got to just love. I mean, yeah, here's like a little person in Hollywood figuring out, what's my next project?
Uh-huh.
So he does this movie with Lon Chaney, where, of course, he's having to play an evil character, because usually, you know, little people are either like something to laugh at or something to be afraid of, you know?
Yeah.
But what's a movie where I could be the hero? He has this short story. He shows it to Todd Browning. Todd Browning
was in the circus,
when he was a kid, dropped out of school,
that was
joined
so cool.
the circus, which my parents used to say that to me. Like, I didn't even understand what that meant. Like, what are you going to do? Drop out of school and join the circus? I didn't know that that
you
actually
wasn't.
Todd
was
Browning
path.
Did that. He was the most successful horror movie director during the beginning of talking movies, when there are all these monster movies, and wants to do something that is more real. That's not just an actor with a bunch of makeup, and it's not just some made-up myth. This is like how we really marginalize people with genetic mutations.
Right,
you know, so it's so interesting that he wanted to do that. And then they had to send... you know, casting directors, because how do you find these people? They didn't want to have, like, people pretending to be...
Also ahead of its time, especially now that representation is such a big thing, and it's like you can't cast a cis man as a trans woman. You know, all this stuff that people are just catching up to. It's like Todd Browning knew, because they could have cast, you know, it would have been socially acceptable at the time. And just used
and maybe even a successful movie because people were not ready to see the real thing.
Right.
No one wanted to see that. Yeah. And we should get into that in a bit, which is how the movie was received. But even before that, so he had somebody traveling around the country going to sideshows to see what kind of fucked up people were out there.
Right.
You know? And I just love that guy. I can't remember his name, but the guy who
Prince Randian with the who rolls
the cigarette.
Yes.
That guy's the best guy. I mean,
know.
A guy who's just a torso and a head.
Yes.
And he's acting in the scene and doing dialogue while he is rolling a cigarette.
He's so good.
And lighting a cigarette. And it's like, the movie is
Or I guess he just lights a cigarette, but I read that the longer scene, he rolls it and they cut out the rolling.
Well, we'll get to that, which is the what happened to the movie after the fact.
Yeah, right.
But in terms of making it, you know, they brought all these, I hate saying freaks, but I don't know what else to call
them. I think
them.
In the context of this movie,
certain
that's
people.
Like the preferred pronoun. Not pronoun, but they like call themselves freaks in this movie. Yeah.
So
maybe not on the street. Don't call a little person a freak. But.
Bring them to, they come out to Hollywood, and they're living on the studio lot where they're shooting the movie, and they're eating.
Segregated.
Well,
I fucking read this.
Yeah, at first they're eating. I'm very impressed with how much research you've done. Good work.
Thank you.
So at first they're in the commissary. Mm-hmm. And Louis B. Mayer and some of the other people at the studio don't want to eat in the presence of these freaks.
Yeah.
So they have to, they erected a tent where they would eat their meals and not be at the commissary.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Harry Earls, his sister Daisy, and I think the Siamese twins were also allowed to.
And then the more probably Hercules and Cleopatra.
Oh no! Well, they're not. They're just, you know,
able-bodied
normals.
Yeah,
I don't know what you want to call them.
I don't know. They're regular sized.
Yeah.
They look more average.
Yeah,
average looking.
One thing that is amazing is just how the strong man. Like, doesn't look by today's standards.
I know.
It's just like nothing. It's so funny.
I love that. I wrote that down too. That you'd think it would be like Khal Drogo, and he's just like a normal looking guy.
Well, and the two girls, Cleopatra and Venus, for a good chunk, I kept being like, which is what?
They're hard to tell apart.
Yeah, they look so much alike.
It was just their voices that really let me
know.
Well,
and one was
who.
Nice and one was mean.
Yeah. Also, like you said, Harry and his sister, what's her name?
Daisy.
That's his love interest.
Yes.
That to me is really creepy.
They were brother and sister?
They're brother and sister.
I did not know that.
Yep, I found that out after I'd watched it.
So that's why
I
they're not kissing in the movie.
But maybe. If you were an actor, and
wow,
your brother
I didn't
was
know
an
that.
Actor,
no,
you wouldn't
true.
Play
why
the
write
love...
a part? Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
It just feels...
And it's not like they have love scenes.
No, they don't.
You know?
She's a very
Jason
good actor.
And Justine Bateman
she is very good. Like, you feel her pain.
Yeah. Oh, in which one?
Wasn't like Jason and Justine Bateman love interest in something in a jokingly way like Arrested Development?
Yeah, in Arrested Development. Yes, I don't know why I was blanking on the name of the show. Yes, and I knew somebody who from Miami. I didn't know her, but I was like, oh, she went to this school. She was an actor, and then went on to do some soaps. And she and her brother, I think, had like a makeout scene playing love interests. And you're right. Like, I would be pissed if my brother had this perfect part for me and was like, I can't cast you, you're my sister.
Well, whereas people get mad too when actors play brother and sister and then they date in real life. People are like, ugh.
Right. This is the opposite of that. That's true. And
I don't think either one of those things are wrong.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I think making out with your sibling is sort of weird and distracting to the viewer if you know that they're siblings.
I think it's hard for the actor, for sure.
To get hard.
She was great.
She's so good.
She was so sad.
Yeah, her face was heartbreaking, and I loved her voice.
She was so sad that I didn't like him.
Yes.
Because I was like, what a dick.
I'm with you also because Jessica, I had read a lot about this before, years ago, and I was like, this seems really scary. I don't ever want to watch it. So every sort of synopsis I had read was like this little person falls for a normal-sized woman, and she's trying to take advantage of him and take his money, and then this is their vengeance. And none of it mentioned he's betrothed to someone else.
Yeah, that he already had love.
I know. So that makes him a less sympathetic character.
Especially
because,
he, in the beginning, is like, no, I proposed to you.
I got to call bullshit on both you guys.
Let's see.
Okay, because he is getting interest from a tall girl.
So?
He doesn't get that normally, okay?
But he's seeking it out to begin with. Why is he trying to get that
interest? He has someone who loves him.
But you don't think if some tall guy was paying attention to her, she would be like, hey, listen.
No, she loves him.
Things have been great.
No.
You're super cool.
She loves him.
I love you like a brother.
That would be a good line. You have to say, look, I love you like a sister. No, I really felt for her. I think some of it is the acting, and some of it is also just her look.
He doesn't break things off. He's kind of like...
he's stringing her along.
Yeah, he's kind of like, you're crazy. I love you. And then he's immediately making googly eyes at the other one.
Yeah, buying her stuff.
I was not okay with that.
I didn't like it. Also, I don't know.
Feel as bad for him that Cleopatra was lying.
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, if you would have stayed with the nice girl.
Yeah.
I guess I'm sensitive
to it. What you get.
Because.
You once were hit on by a tall lady.
I just feel like he feels so less than. And I understand it's wrong. And he's mistreating a person that he's made this agreement with, this bond. Mm-hmm. But
and then he's treating her like less than.
But yeah. Of course. But I'm saying he has a trauma of being mistreated his whole life and feels like somehow it can be healed by this woman.
You're making a good case.
Yeah.
I see that point. I'm also like, isn't it so nice when someone sees you for who you are and loves you? And I guess you're making the same point about Cleopatra, but he has someone who
But what I'm saying is if I'm him, right? Yeah. And, I think that she might feel as a little person, or he might feel that as a little person, she loves me because I'm a little person. Because
there's not that many to choose from.
This giant loves me in spite of the fact that I'm a little person. She loves me outside of my height. So that's all I'm saying. I'm just making an argument. It's wrong. You marry somebody, don't try to have sex with somebody much taller than them. It's wrong.
But I do think the point of feeling like someone is obligated to love them. Obviously, this is very different, but there's a part of me, right, that in my relationship, I'm very Jewish, and that's what his parents want, and that's what's familiar, and so you like me for that. Obviously, this is a much more extreme version of that, where I could see, she's obligated to love me. Maybe she's got slim pickings. And here's somebody who, in his mind, could have anyone who's a goddess who's choosing him.
In terms of your Jewishness and how it sets you apart, you're 6 inches tall.
You want it to be this passion, this illogical, I don't know.
I also thought it was funny that we see Hercules dumping Venus and then he gets with Cleopatra and I'm like, they look the same.
Yeah, right. And it suggested that Venus was sort of bankrolling Hercules as well. I don't know where her money comes from.
Yeah, she got screwed. All the seals.
Yeah.
She's the seal lady.
I love that shot of the seal getting
Me
into
too.
That.
Oh, so cute. More seals.
Yeah. One of the highlights. Anyway, you do make a good case for him. I respect that. Also, they don't ever make a point of this, but the hot one, it's the one that's supposed to be hot. I personally
preferred Cleopatra.
Cleopatra, thank you. I preferred Venus, but Cleopatra
has. You know, Jean Harlow was supposed to play that part.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see that.
I liked her, Venus. She was very likable.
They were smart to keep out their big stars.
Yeah.
Well, we never got to the part of.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
The movie coming out. Okay, mm-hmm. So when they start to have screenings for the movie and all these little people are so excited that their movie is finally premiering, and when audiences see it, they're repulsed. And it's heartbreaking to them.
Yeah.
So it really has an amazing heartbreaking ending. Now, I think what you were going to say is that you read people vomited, people had miscarriages.
Yeah, that was the part where someone was like, she blamed her miscarriage on the movie. I was like, eesh.
Come on.
I know a little bit about the history, and they're not sure if some of this is traced back to. So the movie, they tried to make people feel less uncomfortable. The movie that is available now that is like
30 minutes less.
Is 30 minutes mm-hmm. less.
This is an hour-long movie. It's like an hour and 8
minutes. Yeah, it was 90 minutes, and so they cut out a lot of it. And
which I could feel in the movie.
It's still you know, performed terribly. Then they re-released it without the MGM logo. And they called it Nature's Mistakes.
Oh, my gosh.
I know. That is, it makes freaks sound like a compliment,
yes.
right? And some of those stories about the original release of Freaks are traced to the marketing mm-hmm. of Nature's Mistakes.
Ah.
That when they were actively then embracing it and saying that the movie is going to repulse you to try to figure out how to make some of their investment
right.
back on it.
So were they initially marketing it as, like, something else?
They were marketing it as Todd Browning's Freaks, the maker of Dracula,
right,
the next great horror movie.
Right.
And I guess one of the reasons why it just speaks to me is, like, the thinking that, like, all these monsters are tortured outcasts,
yeah.
right? Every one of them. That's kind of, we're afraid of them, but we also love them.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't handle it. When it's real.
Right.
Like, it's so interesting. We need the makeup.
Right.
You know?
It's like the limits of what people are willing to look at.
Yeah.
Well, and I thought all the characters got nice moments. They were likable. They were normal. They were human. It was all those
they're
things that...
They're looking out for each other. They're...
Yeah, that I didn't know exactly what I was going to get. And then I was like, they're so sympathetic. They're so nice. They have this great community together. And
there's such a sense of community. That's
one of the things I read was like someone had said like how this movie, time has been favorable to it. That when you watch it now, it is really...
Yeah, it started to get attention in the 60s is when it sort of had a where people started to care about it and like it.
Yeah, I also did some research, and what I learned last night was that I think the Venice Film Festival showed it.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, that, I was like, that was really interesting to
me. Yeah,
very cool.
I
wonder
cool,
how that... So, yeah, it got rescued and, you know, became something that... And it's such an interesting part of movie history. More than, like, I don't have any interest. I've never seen the original Dracula. I've never seen the original Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Because it's like, I know what it is. I've seen clips of it.
Right.
I know what
that
movie is.
On Saturday Night Live.
This story is so amazing. Of the making of it, the failure of it,
that
and
be
the
a
revival
movie too.
Of it.
That really should be. So your brother-in-law was working
on
it?
Yeah, I mean, it's not something that ever came to fruition.
Too bad, because it would it could be like Hearts of Darkness, some sort of making of that.
You mean like the documentary that was the making of? Yeah, I've thought about picking it up again, because I do really love the story so much.
Yeah, it's great.
And it is a really good movie. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, there's a lot to love about it. I don't know if we should cut this, if this is offensive to say, but I don't mean it to. It just was really... It threw me because I've seen little people on screen before. And it's funny, there's this feeling of Peter Dinklage is like leading this cool movement. And you're like, oh no, this was happening in the 30s. But the two little people leads, to me at first, I thought looked like babies. And maybe we have to cut that. And that's not like I was confused. I thought they had cast children because I was like, they didn't look to me like little people. He looked like a baby. And I was really confused. We have to cut this out. But that's really what I had a hard time with. Just because I had to stop it to look it up.
I think that you should cut it out because that is what their plight is. That people look at them and think that they're babies. And that's why the Harry Earl story is so incredible.
Yeah.
Is because here's this guy who, I mean, I don't know that much about him. But the fact that he figured out how to take the way that he looks and mm-hmm. the way that he feels, and, you know, locate the short story, get in a movie where he gets the right director, yeah. get that director interested, get that movie made. So what
get
if the movie...
Get his sister apart.
Get his sister apart. It is such an amazing story.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. Fucking good for him.
And willing to make himself look, you know, bad, as you guys
yeah.
say.
Yeah, right. And he's also like, everybody's sort of laughing at him behind his back in
yeah,
the movie.
Yeah, he's the fool in the movie.
Yeah. He's for kind falling of pathetic. For it. Yeah.
So I think that is...
Especially because Cleopatra doesn't hide it very well.
Yeah.
She's such
she's
a bitch about
good.
It.
No.
So not to repeat myself, but I really connect with Todd Browning wanting to, you know, having known people like that when he was in the circus and wanting to tell their story and yeah. humanize them. Mm-hmm. And Harry Earls wanting to be an actor in Hollywood and finding the right part for himself.
Yeah,
and
I do love that.
The way their stories intersect and leave us with this piece of movie history is just really exciting.
Yeah. I agree. I'm really glad you chose it. Cleopatra is wearing a ring when we first meet her on her ring finger, her like to suggest that she's married, which I don't think is supposed to mean anything, but I did notice it, and I thought that was interesting.
I disagree.
Okay. You think it was on purpose?
No, I don't think it's interesting.
All right, fine. Maybe it means something else in the circus. Maybe. Yeah.
I thought the Siamese twins flight was interesting. Oh, like yeah. How you've got, how they're both trying to have separate lives, and they have these husbands, or
one
a husband
a
and a
dick.
Fiance.
Yeah.
And they both
they're both
kind
fiancés,
of,
right?
I thought one was married.
Answer?
I thought one was married and then one gets engaged.
I thought one is engaged and the other one gets
but
engaged.
But anyway.
Either way, yeah.
But the idea that you've got both these men trying to control the situation mm-hmm. was so fascinating to me.
Yes. Also, that guy is, the first one, is a real dick. Is like bossing her around.
And oh, yeah.
That's the way you talk to women back then.
But the fact that one is like, well, you should come around. And then the other one's like, yeah, you should come around.
Yeah, come visit us.
Yeah.
Also, the he, she character.
I made a note about that. It was like, this is just a side ponytail. This is just a girl wearing a side ponytail. I was confused by that. Because it was like one side looked like a girl. It was just because the hair was pulled to one side.
No, but what I'm saying is that it's just like ahead of its time that they were dealing with someone who did not identify as either gender.
Right. That's true.
And dealing with, even within the circus, transphobia.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. It's interesting there was something that felt a little transphobic to me, and I don't know what Todd Browning's intention was, but who is it? Who's our like male hero? Not Hercules, but
the clown?
Yeah. I don't remember his name. Okay, yeah, the clown. The clown is talking to Schlitzy and uses feminine pronouns.
Frozo. That was the clown's name. Frozo.
Oh, thank you. Frozo is talking to Schlitzy and saying, look how pretty her dress is, and they all use feminine pronouns, but Schlitzy was a male. So I don't know what the point of that is.
Well, I think maybe you're taking a leap to call that transphobic. I mean, I don't know why.
He's very affectionate, but he's
misgendering. I don't know why the choice is how we're gendering Schlitzy, but I think part of Schlitzy's act, as I understand it, was Schlitzy performed as a girl.
Okay.
So I think that her professional shtick was that she's a girl.
Or his professional shtick.
I don't...
what I read was that Schlitzy was a boy, but maybe, yeah.
Schlitzy was a boy. And I'll go a little further. Yeah. I can go a little deeper with Schlitzy.
Okay.
The reason why Schlitzy started wearing dresses in the first place is in one of the Foster families. Rumor has it that Schlitzy was born into a wealthy family, and then they abandoned him.
Oh.
And then one of the Foster family started putting dresses on him because it was easier to change him because he was incontinent.
Oh, wow.
So it was easier to clean him up.
Wow, that's a sad and fascinating story.
Yeah.
And that's a rumor passed down for centuries?
This is what I know. I think I know about Schlitzy. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't read that, but yeah. I think that's really interesting.
Well, and I was really on board with Frozo and Venus's love story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really liked it because you had so many, especially with Hercules and Cleopatra being such dicks.
Yeah.
To have Frozo be so like genuinely nice to everybody mm-hmm. and that she finds that attractive was like just so nice.
And the bearded lady gives birth and that seems like a nice relationship too. There's a lot of like finding love in the circus.
Yeah. Well, I felt like it was a real community.
Yeah.
Especially at the end.
Yeah, they really
stick together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, something I read, and I wondered if you read this too, was that when somebody was so shocked in the commissary and when they had to erect the tent for the some of the freaks, I read that it was F. Scott Fitzgerald. I don't know if that's provable by fact, but that he was the one. He was doing some screenwriting for MGM.
Well, you know I know a lot about this, right?
No.
You do know.
Oh, because of, yes. So. Well, yeah, right. I do know, but I forgot. Andrew also wrote a great pilot. So
F. Scott Fitzgerald was a Hollywood screenwriter mm-hmm. at that time, was at MGM. And there is a rumor, supposedly, that he vomited when he saw the Siamese twins in the commissary. And then, whether it was him or not, he uses that story in another short story of his called Crazy Sunday, I believe.
Yes.
Which is a screenwriter character different from the Pat Hobby screenwriter
right.
that we have talked about. I Fitzgerald also wrote these short stories called the Pat Hobby stories that I adapted into a pilot for Amazon.
It was a great pilot. Yeah. I read it. I feel like that's not dead yet. You never know what's dead. I also haven't listened, but I want to. Maybe you've heard this, that Tom Waits has a song called Lucky Day that's about Prince Randian. I don't know how you say his name. Randian, the amputee.
Just say it confidently.
The
say it confidently. No one's going to correct
you. All right. Prince Randian. Randian. I also saw that he's married to somebody named Princess Sarah. And I was like, okay, did they name themselves Prince and Princess? And then I couldn't find anything about Princess Sarah.
They're professional names. They're circus performers. Everyone has to have a...
Well, I couldn't find anything about his princess. A sexy name. Is all I'm getting at. Yeah. I wanted to know more about who he's married to.
But there's no sideshows anymore. Like, I don't think they exist. Where someone can get work just by walking funny.
Right.
Or, you know... Yeah. Being born with some kind of genetic mutation.
Right. Also, the idea, like you were saying, that Hercules isn't actually very strong or buff. It's funny to me that even if he were, that would be enough to count as a freak. Like, you wouldn't think of The Rock as a freak.
Yeah, well, but people didn't look like that then. People didn't train in the same way. So you were a freak.
It's impressive to see somebody, like, that's part of the show, is like, look at this thing, I'm going to lift it.
Right.
Just like Cleopatra is doing trapeze. That's right. It's just aerial work.
Also, a part of the circus was you would have a strong guy and he would challenge anybody from the town for fighting. So that was just, and they made money off of that. So part of how when you were a traveling circus, you had to have somebody who was going to fight people.
Interesting.
Yeah.
The score is insane in the best way. There are moments where it's like happy circus music, like it sounds like musical chairs kind of music, but in some serious scenes, like the breakup between Hercules and Venus, they're playing this like circus music. And then other scenes are totally silent. And
I'm not sure what happened with the scoring and the mixing of it's very confusing. Like there are times when it seems like things are on a loop.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't seem like it's scored music. Right. It's just a loop of something.
Which could be a deliberate, like, the circus music was.
Yeah. But it was, I did not watch the whole movie in preparation for this. I've seen it a few times. Mm-hmm. But in watching it again, I found the parts last night, I really found the music difficult.
Yeah. I wonder if it was a choice or a budgetary thing.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
It didn't bother me at all.
It didn't bother me, but I noticed it.
I just didn't even notice it. That's so funny.
Yeah.
I love the scene.
Well, because there's so much to look at. Like, you know, it's your first watching of it. You're just like, I'm watching a torso light a cigarette.
Right. There's so much to take in.
Well, and they're also compelling. I love the scene when they're playing and someone comes and yells at them and is like, you know, being on my property is the same as stealing.
Yeah.
And then like the
turns it around.
Yeah, the woman is like, they're like children and we're just like having a day off and the person is sympathetic then. It's such a great moment to be like, to turn someone in their tracks.
And it's such a movie about people that are marginalized, so you expect them to sort of be beaten down in that moment, and it's nice that they're not. They're just allowed to play.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sweet. I felt like Cleopatra's Jolene and Frida's like Dolly Parton.
I think that's right.
Thank you.
I just watched the Jolene episode of Dolly's Netflix series. But I had to. I just love that song. That song and I was is so like, good. All right, what is a Jolene story? I got to check it out.
It's so good. This I didn't write down, but you were talking about how you loved, Jessica, the relationship between the clown, Frozo. And
Venus.
But I felt sad for her in that one scene where they're supposed to have a date and he just completely forgets about it. And then he acts like it's no big deal and why is she getting so bent out of shape about it? But then he just kisses her and all is forgotten.
Well, because he does the kiss and then he says that really nice thing like, what does he say? Oh, it's not the first time I've thought about doing that.
Yeah, that is a sweet thing. But then why'd you forget about the date?
He got really excited about making a boat with wheels or a tub with wheels on it.
All right, fine. I'd be excited too.
He got an idea and he had to follow through.
All right, that's fair. Something that made me really scared to watch this is I had read in the Wikipedia. Actually, I kind of want to pull it up just because.
Oh, the end scene?
Yes, that when they kind of have their revenge.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a lot more gruesome since it had said that it was, you know, like rated X in Europe and all these things.
Yeah.
But I thought it was going to be a lot more disturbing and then it was so edited down.
Well, it also says, and I think there was more of it in the longer version, but mm-hmm. It says sometime later, Cleopatra has been made into a grotesque, squawking human chicken on display for carnival patrons. Her tongue has been removed. One eye has been gouged out. The flesh of her hands has been melted and deformed to look like duck feet. Her legs have been cut off. And what is left of her torso has been permanently tarred and feathered. But you can't, it looks like instead of going, oh, she was permanently tarred and feathered, it's like, oh, they put her in a feather costume. You know, like, and also one eye looks smaller, but you can't tell, it doesn't look like it's been gouged out. I don't know if this is a thing where Wikipedia is wrong or we just can't really see it.
Or if there was more late in the earlier version.
Yeah, but well, I was scared to see that. And then it was like, oh, this is kind of fine.
There's the wedding dinner scene. Where they're all
classic.
They're all yelling like in an affectionate way. You're one of us,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And we accept you.
Mm-hmm.
Which she's so grossed out by.
Yeah.
That then she starts yelling and screaming and like ruins the celebration. But they say it in such an affectionate way, and then at the end for it to come back and be like one of us.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, that's so great. And then my other thinking, though, was like, well, she's such a dick. Why do you want to be stuck with her?
I got to say, I really admire that actress because I would say it's probably harder to have to be an actress around all these people being shitty to them.
Yeah.
As opposed, I mean, that seems a lot harder than pretending to be married to your sister.
Yeah, that's true.
She's great. All that stuff with her poisoning where she has to pull out the little vial.
Yeah, she's so loathsome and she's good at it.
It's really nice. I could see that you really did enjoy it.
Yeah,
like,
I did.
You're speaking about it affectionately. Like, I'm happy that I just got two people who never saw the movie to see it and are now discussing the making of it.
Oh, like, yeah, I'm loving this. This is so nice.
I don't think you can separate this movie from the story of how it got made. Like, they're so intertwined with each other.
Especially because the movie's only an hour.
Yeah.
It's like, why?
Yeah, right. You have to know how it managed to be so short.
And there's, like, certain cuts and stuff where I was like, that was fast.
Mm-hmm.
It just, it was a little jarring sometimes.
But, like, normally in a movie, you don't want to know anything other than what's on screen.
Right.
And here it's, like, it's one story. Like, the story of the movie and the story of how it got made in the first place, what the making of it was like, and how it was received, and then how it was re-received later all make up the total story.
Right. It's like so legendary.
Yeah.
It's also, you can kind of see it when you're watching it because you're like, these aren't just average-sized people playing parts. Like, it's so clear that it's not special effects. So you start to wonder, how did they find everybody? And it's all tied up in like the mythology of how it happened.
But they're all such good actors.
They are.
And the characters
they're professional entertainers.
Yeah.
They're all in circuses. Yeah. They're all doing shows all day long.
Yes, but there's also a thing where sometimes stage actors are not good on film, and especially in that era because people were so over the top and hokey. But there's still so many like great grounded performances.
But and what I think about,
I forgot that they were really circus people because like they were so good that I was just like, they must be playing characters.
Right, right.
What I like to think about when I'm watching it is how, like, they thought this was their big opportunity to tell this story.
Yeah.
You know, like, that people could finally see that they're just like everyone else. Because at the circus, all anyone does is, you know,
gawk.
gawk and mm-hmm. be like, "Oh my God, I can't believe it. This is crazy." And they have to play that up. They don't. Yeah. They don't let the audience or the rubes mm-hmm. see what they're really like and how they interact with each other and how they are people, and just to be able to show that, what they're like behind the scenes, and then share that. It must have been so exciting for them.
Right,
and then
yeah.
so heartbreaking when right. they went to that screening, when they went to their premiere Ugh. And everybody was like, "Oh, I can't take it." And then yeah. the studio heads were like, "Cut it out, cut it down, yeah. cut it down.
I don't like to
re-release
think about
that part. It as mistakes of nature."
Oh, it's horrible.
Yeah, that's just, that makes me sad.
Yeah.
I wonder how many of them live to see its later success. Is there a moment that's scariest to you guys?
I mean, the ending. I found
of her in the on display.
No, I mean the whole when they confront her. But it is like a victorious scary.
Yeah,
but
you're rooting for them.
There is something scary about when they're saying "one of us."
Yeah,
and they're tapping into that anger that we've mm-hmm. all been feeling.
Right,
and they're tapping into it, and you're afraid. You know, of seeing what they're capable of. Even though you've been right. on their side, there yeah. is this like, well, they are different. And how violent will they be?
Right.
And like, I mean, they did push it.
Yeah.
Well, in that moment where she is going back to her, not trailer, but wherever, whatever that version is, where she leaves him and then she's going into hers. And as she's about to step up under the stairs, there are people watching
yeah.
her. And she
yeah.
sees them.
You know yeah. what? That's the scariest part. Yes. When you see them spying on her, mm-hmm. like that really gave me the chills.
That's really creepy.
Yeah.
I think.
Even though you're with them. You
right.
know?
You're rooting for them, but just the shot is so creepy.
Yeah.
It's so unnerving. Something that scares me, and you're not going to like this, but Andrew, because you're the defender of him. But something that scares me in like a way that I can relate to now is Frida coming back at the end and like still being there for him. That to me is so scary, like being left for someone and then being still so
when
devoted.
He's alone in his mansion
yeah.
at the end.
I'm like, oh, poor lovesick puppy. That's a scary thought to me.
Look, I'm not defending a fictional character's behavior. I'm just saying there's another side to it.
Sure.
Yeah.
But also from her perspective, maybe she's very empathetic and really understands where he's coming from. But
what I'll say is I
would know I was always second choice and I was settling for being second choice. That would feel bad.
But
and you know how I feel about that? She is the stronger character because mm-hmm. to be able to forgive is such an important thing.
And not having any pride about it.
Absolutely. And letting go of that. She could drive herself crazy, but deciding to forgive somebody for making a mistake that he knows is a ridiculous mistake. I mean, I don't know. That takes real bravery.
Well, they make a point to say that he had like kind of been alone in the mansion and isolated yeah. himself, and that's kind of his penance.
Yeah. But she comes and finds him.
But you have a fear of being humiliated.
Sure. Yeah.
yeah.
So I connect to the collective freaks in that sense, but also to, yeah, to, you know, when it's so obvious to everyone but you that somebody's not into you, like that feeling is horrifying.
Right.
I don't think I do it because I'm so guarded against it, but I've seen other people do it and I'm like mortified for them where I'm like, that person doesn't like you. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You know, it just hurts.
Yeah.
Well, and it's Frida, right, who tells Cleopatra about all the money.
Yeah.
That's right. A bummer.
Yeah.
Because Cleopatra was like only kind of joking at first. And then she finds out about all the money. And mm-hmm. then she's like, ooh, we got to kill this guy.
Yeah. It doesn't bat an eye. They're just so down to do it. I didn't totally understand how everybody put together that it was poison. At first, I thought it was because the doctor says there was poison. But then nobody really reacts to that. And then later they know that.
Well, because the one guy starts watching.
And he's just reporting back to everybody?
Yeah, he starts watching and he sees her get the vial out and mm-hmm. do that whole thing.
I think he also sees her with Hercules getting intimate, getting frisky.
Well, Hercules and her kiss at the wedding dinner.
I know. Like, it's brutal.
It's not, you don't have to be like a spy to see it. It's in front of everybody.
You know what else was really creepy is the scene where she goes to get him more medicine, which of course is poison, and she comes back and everyone's like holding their different, like one person's like shining his knife. What are they mm-hmm. all doing? Is it something
one's
great
got
and
a
creepy?
Gun
mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. rubbing it maybe.
Well, one takes a knife and I think he like licks it a little bit
maybe.
But I think he's like getting a he's like shining it
right
but
right.
no where I was like ugh.
They're like shining a knife
that is
and
very
a gun.
Menacing.
Yeah, that scene was also really creepy.
Yeah,
yeah, that's right before she leaves.
Mm-hmm.
That's what makes her leave.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Ugh.
High tension. Okay, if you are anyone in this movie, who do you think you are?
If I am someone in the movie, I guess, what's the clown's name? The clown?
Frozo.
I'm Frozo, yeah.
Why?
I guess.
Because you like to make people laugh?
Yeah. Silly guy. Like, that bathtub bit was great. I love a good bathtub bit.
Okay. Jessica?
I think I'd like to be Venus because I like animals a lot. The fact that her act was like, see, I could not have been the trapeze artist because I've tried trapeze and it was awful. I was very bad at it.
I'm also very clumsy.
So if I was like in a circus, my act would be like, and look at this animal.
I didn't have an answer before, but in talking now, I feel like I'm the score where like I don't know where I'm supposed to be and I'm not certain if I'm repeating myself and I don't have like that much variety, but I'm trying.
That's why you're really connected to it.
Yeah. I'm like, am I on repeat? Am I saying something new? And I'm not. That's probably me. Do you want to promote anything?
Nope.
Okay. You're on Twitter. Do you want anybody to follow you?
Nope.
Okay, great.
I'm more of a, what do you call it, lurker?
Yeah, you like to look at other people.
Voyeur.
Andrew, for a long time, would follow and unfollow me on Instagram. I would be like, why do you keep on following me?
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. I got to start doing that again. I didn't know people knew when you unfollowed them. And then she told me, and so then I started doing it a lot.
I've accidentally done it to people, and then I'm like, oh, they probably think I'm such a dick.
If you, like, do it again right away, I think people figure it's an accident. No?
Well, because I think what happens is I'll accidentally unfollow, and then I follow right away, and then they'll get a notification that I'm following them, and they'll be like, she wasn't?
Yeah, right. That's
but
true.
Why do you care if someone stopped following you?
I want to know why you stopped following me.
Right.
Why do you stop following me?
Sometimes less. Sometimes more.
The poet, everybody. Andrew Gerland. Poet laureate of the United States of America. All right, you're a good salesman, so maybe you should give a pitch to people for why they should rate, review, subscribe, why we deserve 5 stars, the nice things they could say about us.
You want people who are listening to this to give you a positive review.
That's right.
It'd be helpful.
Yeah.
Well, maybe reverse psychology.
Okay, let's hear it.
Like, you don't have the guts.
Ooh.
To give this a 5-star review, you're too scared. You're like a baby, like a little baby.
All right.
Yeah. Okay, we'll see what that does.
I really like that. And if you want to tune in next week, we're doing The Crush. Is that our next one? Hold on, let me check. Oh, I think Raw.
Yeah, I'll say that. Coming up next is Raw. That was a rough one.
Yeah, if you wanna stay current, we're watching
Cannibal, Coming of Age Story.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Good case for vegetarianism.
Keep in touch, guys.
Lots of love. We're signing each other's yearbooks. If you wanna get a head start for next week, we're doing Raw.
And thank you for coming on. I'm glad that I finally sat down and watched this movie because I knew about it. And didn't have the guts or the reason to sit down and watch it.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy it. I was pleasantly surprised that it was really compelling.
Awesome. I want to see Frida in more. But yeah, thank you so much. This is great.
Thank you. And thank you for listening.
Hey, thanks for having me.